Well, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you our second speaker for this session, my very own colleague at the Topoi B5-3 project on early Christian knowledge claims in Greece, Dr. Marina Vexina, who is passing out a handout, so you should receive that. Dr. Vexina is a linguist and epigraphist by training and an expert in what I must say is some of the most obscure and archaic Greek dialects one can possibly come up with. She's been a research assistant with the inscriptionist Greki at the Berlin Brandenburg Academy and a research assistant on our Topoi project since 2014. Her role includes editing the ICG database and collecting Christian epigraphic materials from the Peloponnese and, in the near future, from Thracia and Scythia. Her presentation today is entitled The Language of Prayer in the Early Christian Epigraphy of the Peloponnese. Thank you.
The Christian prayers on stone are rarely found until the 4th century, and in order to get a somewhat consistent picture, I will mostly refer to the material of the 5th and 6th centuries. It can be expected that by this time, the religious register of Christian language has already gone through some development and gained its specific features. What we find in the inscriptions of the Peloponnese is that the most prominent feature of the language of the prayers is the lack of originality. This opposes the epigraphical to the literary tradition, as for example that of Clement of Alexandria. The epigraphical texts commonly exhibit very little individual in as far as the wording is concerned. And some forms of prayer may be more conservative than the others. The acclamations, I begin with the acclamations that are not composed in form of a dialogue. That is, they do not use or imply the use of the forms of the first and second persons. These acclamations normally take direct biblical quotations. The illustrative list of these acclamations is compiled under number 1-4 in your handout. A word on my presentation of the material. The bare numbers and the handout refer to the numbers in the forthcoming volume of the Corinthian inscriptions of the 4th to 6th centuries AD. We find Sanctus Acclamation, number 141. The second example from Tigea, it is found in a mosaic inscription in an early Christian basilica. And presumably, according to the restoration, it omits an important part of the acclamation, the naming Savaoth, reproducing only the very beginning of Isaiah's phrase, to which it attaches the Trinitarian formula, where the preposition soon serves as means of coordination equivalent to the conjunction kai, which is a construction characteristic of the medieval Greek and found otherwise in Peloponnese. Unfortunately, little information is available on the use of Benedictus acclamation, number 142, and its use in Peloponnese, since its attestation is confined to one fragment on which almost nothing is known, except that it was found in Phrius and now lost. And the excavation context is not described by the first editor. It can be presumed that the block with this inscription, of which only a small part is left, Nos en Onoma, was a part of a church building. But the liturgical acclamations are not always found in the context of ritual buildings. There is a remarkable group of inscriptions in the Peloponnesian corpus, which are the graffiti incised on pavement slabs found in a chamber in the area of shops in Corinthian Agora. This graffiti contained prayers composed by persons who were imprisoned and therefore reveal to us the practice of praying in exceptional circumstances, not in a church. The prisoners, as can be seen from these texts, remain faithful to their practice of solemn acclamations performed in the church, and one of the prisoners begins his plea with the Sanctus acclamation. Again, number 141, the first example. But almost nothing else is preserved of this text. However, it is securely ascribed to the prisoner's inscriptions, because it mentions Bucellarius, and there are other mentioning of Bucellarii in the prisoner's inscriptions. The atmosphere of fierce conflict is rendered by the originally non-Christian acclamation specific of the circus contests, Nikahe Tyuche, with genitive expressing the party for which the victory is desired. The use of this acclamation in circus contests and Christian identity do not exclude each other, and this is explicitly evidenced for Peloponnese by a dipinto found in Argos, which reads Nikahe Tyuche Prasinon, beginning with a cross. Among the Carcerarii, two graffiti consist of the acclamation Nikahe Tyuche, with genitive of persons, and two other begin their prayers with it. The oppressed party describes themselves with words alluding to the Old Testamental sufferers. They say, Nikahe Tyuche ton kataponumenon en to anomu topo tuto, with extensive mixture of cases, of course. Parallels for kataponumenos are given under number 132. They apply to the Old Testamental sufferers, but found also in the New Testament. This prayer concludes almost with a curse, Mi elisis ton balota emas vode, which in a more proper Greek would be read, Me elisis ton balonta emas vode. Have no mercy on the one who has thrown us in here, number 128. The opposition between justice and mercy is traditionally resolved in favor of mercy in the New Testamental doctrine, but justice is not denied entirely in the New Testamental tradition, and the call for justice apodos marinu to balotos himas vode, render his due to Marinus who has thrown us here, uses the same verb as does the prophecy on the last judgment in Matthew. Meli gar huios to anthropo erheste en te doxo tu patros autu meta ton angelon autu kai tota apodosi hekasto kadaten praxen autu. Nevertheless, the discourse of rendering one's due is closer to the Old Testamental tradition, and not surprisingly, we find quite close parallels in the Septuaginta. The fiercest curses, gathered under number 1 to 9, adjure God to kill, to destroy utterly the enemies with quite unequivocal expressions, apolison, and even poison moro kako apotanetus. The composer of the Psalm 142, expressing his confidence in God demolishing his enemies, uses apolumi too, no less than its equivalent exoletrevo, which is a Semitism. And God's promises to the Israelites include violent death of their enemies, pesunte phono, in front of their eyes, enantion humon. Even more striking is the encoding of the cruel attitude towards enemies by the verb describing the flagellation of Jesus in the New Testament. Fragello, tentatively presumed in the number 1279. Somewhat more balanced petitions call on God for adjudication, and they are gathered under number 127. Prisoner's phrase "Dikason anameson emuketon ektron mu" almost coincides with the words that David says to Saul, "Dikase kurios anameson emukaisu." May God be judge between me and you, with a slightly different formulation found some lines later. Genoi to kyrios eis kriten kai dikasten anameson emu kai anameson su. Less close but synonymic utterances are used in psalms. Dikason kyrietus adikuntas me, dikason ten diken mu ex etnus uk hosio. As well as the more discouraged pote poieses moi ekton katadio konton me krisin. God is not only called upon for adjudication, he is equated with justice. Kyrie goteos kai dike katara, number 113. This naming God by an abstract concept echoes the Hebrew tradition of naming God. Justness is the attribute of God who is named goteos tes dikes tes dikadzuses or tos. The figura etymologica based on dike is not unusual for Greek and is found already in Hesiod. However, in this context, it is likely to be inspired by the phraseology of the Septuagint. The examples are given under the same number. The range in diversity with which prisoners addressed God is further shown by calling God the one who separated off the darkness, Hotos Kotos Diachorisas, number 111, and made the light rise up across the universe, Kephos Anatelas Diates Eukumenis. The reference to the passage at the beginning of Genesis is, to my knowledge, unique in the Christian epigraphy. The darkness of the prison may have inspired it, but it is of particular interest that the praying person goes beyond the simple reproduction of the canonical prototype and extends it by what is perhaps his own expression, "Fos anatelas diates eukumenes." This image and the lexics are not aligned to the Bible, and some examples are given in the handout, but the whole phrase seems to be singular. The discourse of salvation in prisoners' prayers is rooted in the biblical tradition no less than the discourse of the righteousness and justice. The request to release is expressed with the verb lutroo, common for the Psalms, and growing in importance in the New Testamental context. This is number 1 to 6. Lutrose tu topu tutu, says one of the prisoners. A slightly less secure case is the analytical construction sozomenus poieson, apo tu topu tutu instead of soson, for example. If the conjecture is right, the participle in place of the verb calls to mind the concept of the saved, for which there are expressions with a participle both in Old and New Testamental writings, such as laos sozomenos and hot sozomenos. The need to express the faith in exceptional circumstances led the prisoners to resort to the authoritative means of expression. This mode of expression allowed them to get some degree of abstraction from their situation. If we look beyond the prisoner's inscriptions, the status of the universal form of requests can be ascribed to the imperative boiety. Number 1-1 lists the attestations. Twice this form is also found in Carceraria. That this formulation is rooted in the Psalms tradition has been shown by Breitenbach in his article on the Corinthian prisoners, which is forthcoming. Formulas otherwise, usually in the epigraphic prayers, for example, Mnestheti, Eleison, or Aphesis Hamartion, numbers 1-2, 2-1-5, are not so numerous in Peloponnese. A less frequent ephide is found in Corinth once. For number 146, Amen, traditionally concluding a prayer, can also follow a curse against tomb violators, as it does in a sepulchral inscription from Argos. It is also found in the midst of a sepulchral inscription in Corinth, where the context is scanty, but the possibility, it possibly does not contain a prayer. It is a cross-linguistic observation that sacred language should exhibit some degree of unnaturalness. It would make use of expressions that are not conventionalized in other registers of the same language. To illustrate it, I would like to draw attention to one grammatical particularity, namely the form of God's address by the nominative with the article, ho theos. The examples are gathered in number 2-2. Though the vocative is a recessive category in the late Greek, the consistency with which ho theos is used in the Christian language does not allow to think of an internal Greek development. Ho theos, used both with and without preceding Kyrie, is notoriously the Greek adaptation of the Semitic prototype, rendering such features of Hebrew as form of address taking definite article and lack of noun inflection. This Semitism is not confined to the translational Greek, but is also attested in the New Testament. The vocative of theos was not in use in the pagan times, and it does not occur in the Pentateuch text representing the oldest stage of the Greek translation. It is, on the whole, quite infrequent in the Greek Bible and is not attested epigraphically in Peloponnese. This contrasts to the both Christian and pagan magical papyri which make use of te. Probably also the idea of one and the only God has played its role in the retention of this expression in the authoritative Christian language. The intrusion of the colloquial speech into the sacral language is seen on the proliferating collapse of the case system. In the sphere of the verbal categories, it is seen in the admission of the so-called jussive subjunctive into the language of prayer. This form is attested in a quite official inscription, that is in the invocation for the Emperor Justinian. Examples are given under number 2-1-1. There are two versions of this invocation, differing in some details and, among others, in the verbal form. The invocation addressed to God's Mother has imperative phylaxon. The corresponding form in the other version, addressing God by the Nicene formula, has perplexed the editors. The forms suggested as concealed beyond the vulgar writing range from future indicative or optative to aorist imperative middle. However, the aorist subjunctive active was proposed by Guarducci and is the most plausible solution. As for the future indicative, it was indeed used with the jussive function in Greek from the oldest times It's already found in the Gortynian code. However, it is characteristic of this imperatival future that the distribution of power and authority lies in the opposite direction that the one expected in a prayer. The future optative suggested by Bees is highly unlikely to be found outside the indirect discourse. There is no possibility to exclude entirely the aorist imperative middle suggested by Larfeld. However, in view of the active form in the other version, the middle is not very attractive in the problematic passage. This decision is in any case not necessary because the problematic form gains a consistent explanation in light of what is known about the jussive usage of the subjunctive, which is secured for the post-classical Greek. This usage is attested both in the colloquial and literary registers, in the early Christian literature, for example, by Ignatius of Antioch. The examples from the non-literary papyri collected by Mandilaras show, on one hand, that the subjunctive and the imperative were used interchangingly. The examples are given under number 231. And on the other hand, that this usage was associated with periphrastic forms of requests, where the second person is addressed with a circumlocutory expression, like «Gesegnesia lamprotes», «Gesegnesia adelphotos», «Gesediatesis», making the construction formally refer to the third person. The subjunctive is used when the god is called to attend to the wishes of human beings, in particular in the stereotyped greeting formulas at the end of the letters, «Goteos de diaphylaxese» or «Eromenos se echete gedia pronea». But not confined to them, as the last example shows, «Goteos de poiese auton eltein en Alexandria». The same form may be found in another inscription given under number 212, which could contain a prayer, though the fragmentary state does not allow any confidence. There is an epithet anargyre in the line 3, perhaps preceded by agia. This is the form dose. According to the laws of the classical language, this form could only be decoded as future, but the sigmatic aorist subjunctive is attested for the forms of didomi already in the first century AD. A short recapitulation. Despite admitting some inevitable changes into the grammatical structure, the language of prayer exhibits considerable conservatism in the sphere of the wording, where the reliance on the tradition and avoiding spontaneous creations are the main features. The main authority possessed the texts that existed before, and the prevailing scope of the language strategy was unifying believers. Thank you.